Okay. Good evening, everybody. It's Parshas Mishpatim. Now, if you think that we're going to get through all Parshas Mishpatim, so I have to show you. This is on size 14 font, 54 pages. Wow. Okay, so we're going to get all this done in an hour. Okay, not happening.
Yeah, right.
No. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at things that are in the Parsha, which are, I would say, most relevant to our experience on the one hand, and towards the end, we're going to look at the sections that are the narrative of the Parsha. Parshas Mishpatim has three chapters dedicated to different kinds of tort law, some things which are of a different time period, and the concept of the Eved Ivri and Amma Ivri are things which we just don't see anymore, of course. And Parak Chav Gimel, by and large, has things related to the Yom Tovim. That's not the only thing in Parak Chav Gimel. And then Parak Chav Dalet, the narrative goes back to Moshe is about to go up the mountain for 40 days. So it's an interesting question insofar as where Parak Chav Dalet fits in the scheme of the narrative of the Torah, chronologically speaking. Is it before Parshas Yisro? Is it during Parshas Yisro? Is it after? You know, where does it fit? Which is an interesting discussion. We'll see some of what he says about it. Okay, but anyway, so that's the outline of what we're going to be doing tonight, looking at mitzvos or different passages from the Parsha, which most relate to our experience. So the first one we're going to look at is Ayin Tachas Ayin. Ayin Tachas Ayin. So let's just look at the pasuk to bring us back to familiarity. Page 422. Okay, I think Ayin Tachas Ayin, an eye for an eye, is one of the more familiar psukim in all the Torah, you know, worldwide. Certainly Christians know about it. Jews know about it. Even if they don't know the Hebrew, they certainly know the English, an eye for an eye. And so first of all, we'll understand, of course, that Ayin Tachas Ayin doesn't mean an eye for an eye. That's not, just translated. Ayin tachas ayin, maybe it means in place of, right? Or, I mean, if you want to translate the word tachas, it means under, but what does that mean? So that's why it needs to be interpreted. But let's take a look at the context in which it appears. And this is it's a good exercise in general when it comes to reading Parshas Mishpatim. Follow, you know, in the Chumash, in the Torah has these kinds of spaces. In a Chumash, not like Art Scroll, they'll have a samach and a pei in it to indicate where there's a space. Remember the old school chumashim? The more modern chumashim will often have the space. Sometimes they'll write in the samach and the pei. But this is what Art Scroll does. It shows you where there's a space. And that, often enough, indicates a common theme. Not necessarily, but in many cases, it indicates a common theme that you'll find. So here we have these psukim from Chaf Beis through Chaf Hei, which are presumably thematically connected. Where that plays the biggest role, we actually saw last year in the Puyakar class in a mind blowing interpretation, which we're obviously not going to do this year because he doesn't go in that direction when it comes to the mitzvah Baba Machteres, right? Coming when there's a robber sneaking into the household in the nighttime, and what that means. But anyway, we're on page 422. Okay, so let's just read the psukim inside. So these two guys are fighting, and they bump into a pregnant woman, and she miscarries. Okay, basically means that her child doesn't mean that it comes out. I mean that doesn't work that way. But the point is that that they kill the fetus. V'lo yason, but she doesn't die. So there's a punishment which comes on them based on what the husband of the woman is going to assess against them. And if she does die, then the punishment becomes a nefesh tachas in place of a nefesh, soul for a soul, life for a life. And then in that context, the pasuk continues and says, Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, yod tachas yod, regal tachas regal, right? Eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, leg for leg, or foot for foot, kviya tachas kviya, burn for burn, patsa tachas patsa, wound for wound, chabura tachas chabura, bruise for bruise. Okay, so what does all this mean? Now we know as Jews who have studied the Torah and who have at least a base familiarity with how the Torah Shebal Peh explains this to us, that we're not talking about a physical punishment that tries to compensate for whatever happened to the other person. Why? Why is it not that way? Why can't it be that way? Right? You lose a tooth, so what does that mean for you? Can I measure all of the pain, grief, agony, loss for you in a way? And what happens if I lose a tooth, and what if I get an infection because of it? Right? You didn't get an infection, it just popped right out. Now I have to get a tooth pulled. Well, that could be some. Right? You lost an eye. Well, how much more damage was there than just the loss of the eye? Did anything else happen? So you can't go ahead and start stabbing somebody's eye. You have no idea what the repercussions are going to be. The person may die from it. You can't do that. And the same thing goes for any kind of corporal punishment that isn't death. If you say, you know, you murdered somebody, we're going to kill you. All right, that's easy because that's pretty definitive. For anything else in between, you can't. There's no way to say, oh, I'm going to do exactly what happened.
An accident.
Right, but there's no way to punish the person in the exact same way. It's impossible.
Right, I just find it strange that in the context of the different things that are mentioned, a tooth, I mean, you know, an eye, obviously, a hand, a foot, but a tooth, I mean, a tooth is...
Punch someone, you
know. I know, but it's a minor thing compared to the loss of an eye.
Okay, look, I don't, you know, for us now, especially now, you say, oh yeah, I lost a tooth, all right, I'll get an implant. You know, it's right. Very different than once upon a time, especially if they're losing lots of teeth, right? In fact, there's an old Yiddish curse. All your teeth should fall out except for one, and at that one, you should have a toothache. Right? Yeah. Right? So what if all your teeth fell out except for one, and now you lost that tooth? Now you're on a liquid diet if you don't have a way to fix that. Okay, so let's take a look at what he says here, because he begins exactly with this dilemma. He says, "Mikra'os elu kashim ma'od." These passages are very difficult. If he pashtus lishanon yirbe aldil shetischayev Torah onshim gufiim lechaser b'chovel aseinu sheinu yado v'raglo. Basically, the Torah seems to be dictating that there's going to be a physical punishment which is done to somebody, right? You know, and honestly, today when we look at something like that, these kinds of, you know, a punishment of this nature, which is in some cases practiced in extreme areas of the Muslim world. Let's just be honest, that's what it is. So we look at that, right? The cutting off of an arm, right? I mean, that we just view that as a horrible kind of punishment. What is that really what the Torah is telling us? Like, how on earth can you even do the right kind of burn, the right kind of... I mean, it's just, it's impossible. There's no way to make it equal. And that's why the rabbi said these are monetary punishments. So what is the Ksava Kabbalah's challenge?
To prove it out from the Psukim?
Right. To show how it's clear from the Psukim that it is a monetary thing. And I think the easiest way to see it, the first thing that he says is Vinasata. Right, look in Pasuk of Gimel. That's the problem. If you only start with Ayin Tachas Ayin, okay, Vinasata Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. Right, you have to give. Okay, now so that's just the first one. But Billy's going to come along. What's Billy going to say? There's something wrong with the trup here, right?
Look,
Vinasata Nefesh, Vinasata Nefesh, Tachas Nefesh. What should it be? Vinasata nefesh tachas nefesh, or something like that, right?
Yeah,
right?
Not sure.
Oh, you're not sure. Okay, that's fair enough. All right, let's see where he goes with this. And the commentaries say what the Torah is saying is, you know, what should be done to the person who does the injuring. But he says that doesn't really quench the thirst of those who are looking for the truth. Like, how could the Torah tell us, you know, really, we should be breaking the guy's foot, but you know, but it's not practical. So no. Since the Torah has to be telling us, Mama, if you're going to say that the punishment is a monetary punishment, then that must be what the Torah means. It can't just be, oh, it means that really you're going to knock the guy's eye out, but it's not really what it means. What it means is you're going to pay for it. That's not acceptable to the Ksava Kabbalah. Why? Because in his view, as we've said many times, nothing's missing. So if nothing's missing, then we have to find it in the text. V'lezem menachiyav aleinu. He says, that's our obligation. We have to find how he tells us that this is a monetary punishment. Kila le razal. I mean, I guess according to the Drasha Sarbal, Divrei Razal. Razal is another way of saying Chazal, the Rabbanan Zichron L'Racha. Blashon, Ki Yinatsu Anashim. Right? What's the case of Ki Yinatsu Anashim? That's the beginning. Pasuk Chaf Beis. Okay, this is why it's so important to not look at the Pasuk in a vacuum. You have to see it in its context. Okay, because when it says Ki Yinatsu Anashim, Mitzvos Shebamisa Midaber. Okay, this is referring to mitzvos related to death. Sheniskavein laharog es ze v'harag es ha'isha v'chayev misa. Right, why are these two guys fighting? Because one is trying to kill the other one. Right, so Mr. A wants to kill Mr. B. Mrs. Q comes along and she happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and now she's dead. Okay, so okay, alzamru. Okay, what's ason? That the woman dies. If the woman dies, you have to give a life for a life. Nefesh mamish. You try to kill this guy, and you kill somebody else, you're chayiv misa. Okay, now, I think that in the sense of the capital punishment, I don't think that there's as much of an objection in the same way that you would have. You killed somebody, your life is lost. Now, we can get into a discussion about the repercussions of capital punishment, what that does for society, what the Gemara says about it. Okay, but at least insofar as understanding that a fair punishment for killing somebody is dying, okay, so that at least is reasonable. But about the other ones, that's where our problem comes in.
Why isn't it handled the same way? If punishment for losing your arm is monetary, you pay for it through monetary penalty. Why isn't life also not banned in the same fashion?
Okay, so we're going to see. Okay, who's Rav Shimon again?
Rav Shimon
Peres. Okay, could we? The Sover, Niskavin Laharog Azeb, Laharog Azeb, Pater Mimisa. Okay, so there is a view that says, you wanted to kill this guy and you killed somebody else, then you're exempt from Misa. Hach v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh, eino nefesh mamish. Says according to that view, if you killed this person by accident, then the punishment is not actually death. Aval hu nesinas mamon, but it's in fact what you said. Okay, but there is what the person intended to do was to murder somebody. That's elsewhere in the Torah, right? You kill somebody, you die. I mean that's a punishment. But when it's an accidental case, which is the case that's described here, when he didn't hit the guy he's intending to hit, but he hit this woman. This woman who's in the wrong place at the wrong time, he says that would be nesinas mamon. How do you determine what her worth is, what her value is? Okay, so this again is a bigger discussion about how you determine ascertain the value of how do you really put a value on a human being? So you know the halacha says you do it based on the value of how a person is sold in the marketplace. But you know, even that is an interesting question because there are different times in different societies as to how that number is determined. And even so, what if you don't live in a society where there's any slavery? How could you put the value on a human being? So I don't even think that nowadays we would do that. We would have to reinvent what the word market means. Like, what's market? You know, what's a life insurance policy? I mean, I would imagine. Well, right? That's
they do it nowadays. I mean, when someone gets killed and there's a lawsuit.
Okay, fine. Right, so that's right. So right, so that, right, so that's it. But that's a different market than the slave market. Okay, so that's that's my point. Right, of course. Okay, yeah, agreed.
Understood.
Right, agreed. Okay. Amnam. The Tanat Vei Chizkia, the Sober, the Skavin Laharogazet, Varogazet, Pater Misa, Pater Gamke, Mamon, the Chayvim Misa Shogim Putur Mitashlumin. He says. That he says in Tanit Vechizkiah, he says that they're exempt from a death penalty, exempt from a monetary penalty, because those who are obligated for Misos Shogigin, they're exempt. In other words, an accidental murder, they are exempt from paying. Al Kain Ein B'Lashon D'Chi Natsu Mitzvos Sheba Misa El B'Mitzvos Shelo B'Misa. So it's not the chi natsu anashim is referring to a situation where where the what you do when there isn't somebody who dies. Shepagu zeba zeba charafus v'niatzus v'divrei gedufim v'haka'a. Now these guys are fighting. There's a distinction between I'm planning to beat you up so that this fight ends, but I'm not planning to kill you. And that is the introduction here, that v'chi natsu anashim, it doesn't mean that there's any intent to kill. Now, it's not nice what's going on here, but there's no intent to kill at all. That's why when this woman is killed, this wasn't the kind of blows that is supposed to bring about death. Obviously, things happen. You know, you don't want to. That is, I remember once listening to an old time radio Dragnet show. There's some guy who killed somebody, and Friday, as a detective, right, comes in, and the guy says, "I didn't mean to do it. It was a total accident." Friday says to him, "Did you have a gun in your hand?" He says, "Yeah, I did." Then it wasn't an accident, right? And sometimes, you know, if you get involved in a kind of situation where death could come about, who knows? I'm coming to blows, but I don't see that thing on the floor. Then when I punch the guy, he falls and it knocks his head. Well, there you go. So much for my not intending to kill the guy.
It looks like, but you know, it's almost like a loophole is being provided here. Of course he's going to say that I didn't intend to, in my fight with you.
Right.
And the woman was killed. Oh, no, I did not intend to kill.
Look, the bottom line is that with all of this stuff anyway, it doesn't matter. Because Misa in the hands of a court, the court can't kill anybody anyway without there being a proper Hasra'a and a proper, you know, and witnesses. So now two guys are getting in a fight. Hey, realize, Joe, if you hit this guy hard enough, he's going to die, and then you're going to be... he says, oh, no, we're not doing that kind of fight. Right, Joe? Right? Right. No, this is true. We're, you know, we are just, you know, we're duking it out. But when it's all over, when one guy's, you know, a bloody pulp, we're moving on from here. Agreed? Agreed. Shkayach. So, I mean, think about the duels of old. Right? They're fighting. Right? I shoot you, you shoot me, whatever. Somebody dies, nobody's at fault. Right? Didn't work out for Aaron Burr, but, you know. I mean.
He took the cake.
No, Hamilton. He killed Hamilton, but I'm saying for him, he got hammered, but, you know, even though, hey, that's what's supposed to happen. Right, when it comes to damages, you don't need intent. You're obligated for whatever it is that you end up doing. The adam will elda, because a person is responsible. Whatever you do, you're responsible. And so maybe you weren't intending to kill with whatever you did, but so you're not in the realm of somebody who's trying to strike, but it doesn't strike to die, but it doesn't exempt you from having to pay mamon. Avol. So once you start getting involved in a fight, you're going to have to pay for the repercussions, no matter what they may be. And that's why it says, if an accident happens and the person ends up dying, the woman ends up dying, then you have to give nefesh. What does it mean to give a nefesh? It doesn't mean to give your life. It means you give a nefesh, which means mamon, which means money. Skip the parenthesis. He says, we have this teaching as well, that I'm not sure who is quoting, but he says that the Chayve Misos Shogin, those who are obligated for having killed by accident, that they're exempt from paying. And the Rambam is flabbergasted by this. But so based on the pasuk, we have to understand that there are two intents here, and these follow the halacha. In if we're talking about mitzvos that have a death involved, isha nefesh mamish mechayev, and if so, when the woman dies, is the person obligated actually to be killed? And if we're talking about where the circumstance here is one of striking levad uba asona isha, and the woman just died not by intent, then mamon mischayev. Okay, so it really depends on how we're going to view the case. So you're right, David. We have to somehow get to the heart and to the core of what was going on here. And now that we understand that there is a difference in intent in terms of what the perpetrator of this crime was thinking and what he was doing, now we have to understand that the word tachas also could have different meanings. V'huzeh. Kimatsanu shem tachas shorasel mileas makom. Sometimes the word tachas means to fill one's place. Kimilas bimkom. Like, right, right, I mean, that's the same thing. Right, in the place of. Anstatt. What is anstatt?
Instead?
Oh, instead. Instead. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Ve'ikar muvano hismalus davar mekom davar. Right, that when one thing fills the place of the other. Shisra davar malik ilu tachas davar nedar v'acharav kemo kishasli zerach er tachas hevel. Right, when Hevel's dead, Adam and Chava have another child named Shais, and he is Tachas Hevel. What does that mean? He replaces Hevel? No, I had two sons. I had Cain, I had Hevel. Well, now I only have Cain. Well, so now I have another son filling that spot. Is he replacing Hevel? Is he like the spitting image of Hevel? No, he's his own person. But in the sense that there was a gap in my life, in my existence, that's the place that Shais fills. Klamar zera hamali mekomo shel Hevel. V'akohen ha-mashiach tachtov mibonav. Right, that the Kohen who comes tachtov mibonav from his sons, the Kohen who fills his father's place. Is he his father? Is Elazar the son of Aaron ever Aaron? No, but he is now the Kohen Gadol. Okay, who fills his father? Shaben omed b'mkom aviv malei mekomo. Right, he fills the shoes as best he can. Shebechol eile hayesh ha'ave mimalei mekom ha'nedar kodem. The guy who's there is going to fill the place of the one who was there before. Ve'od yishamei shem tachas la'ras ha'toloda ha'mesoveva ha'mesoveves min sibasa shekidma. Kemo tachas asher kinei le'lohav. Right, tachas asher kinei le'lohav. What is that? Tachas asher kinei le'lohav ha'ichaper al b'nei Yisrael v'shem Yishisar. Right, that it's referring to Pinchas. What did Pinchas do? Pinchas killed Zimri. Pinchas killed Zimri. Tachas asher kinei le'lohav. Because, for the reason of, that he was zealous for his God. So, Shehakina Siba Mugdam Mesle Nesinas Brishalom. That it was the zealousness, right, that he was doing that, that's what brought about his getting the Brishalom, the covenant of peace, right? Tachas HaShekin, God says, I'm giving you the Brishalom, the covenant of peace, Tachas, on account of what you've done. On account of the fact that Hashem loved your fathers, right? So, in other words, what does tachas therefore mean? On account of the fact. Okay? On account of the fact. So now, right? And skip to the next line. Okay? Towards the end of Chatam, Ekev and Emar Lenesimas Tam. Kamo, Ekev Tishmun. On account of your listening to. Okay, that's in other words. That's another meaning for the word for the word tachas. Okay, so now let's see. All right, he gives a couple of more explanations. Okay, so now I just want to see where I didn't mark it in my text here, but one of the he gave this great summary, and it's probably towards the end. Okay. All right, so skip towards the end. About seven lines from the end.
Page 2?
Yeah, page 2, 7 lines from the end. Okay? V'nituach halashon. You see, it's at the end of the parenthesis, where it says, V'yigash mem hei vav, the parenthesis, right over there. V'nituach halashon u'bof and zeh. So he says, now I'm going to show you how you break down and read the pasuk. Im ason yiyah ayin, v'nasata tachaz ayin. Okay, now go back to the thing. V'lo yihya ason. That what's going to... I'm sorry. V'im ason yeh. Pasuk of Gimel. V'im ason yihya. Okay? V'im ason yihya. Colon. What's the ason? The ason... Right, we usually translate the word ason as an accident. But the point is that it's the end result of where the damage is done. So he says... Now remember, the Torah just gives us straight prose. It doesn't break things down like an outline. It says, Im ason yihya, so if this were an outline, it would say like this. Im ason yihya, let's say A, right? Capital letter A. Then it would go into little a, right? If the ason is nefesh, then the word vinasata is nefesh. Okay? Im ason yihya ayin, vinasata ayin. Or toward tachas ayin. So let's take a look at how he says it. So im ason yihya ayin v'nasata tachas ayin. If the incident involves an eye, then you have to give in place of an eye. V'masam yeshein, if the incident involves a tooth, v'nasata, you have to give in place of a tooth. V'chein chalap ratim achazet. Yishareish milas, imasam yehiyah, umilas v'nasata. He says, you have to use the language of Pasuk Chav Gimel and fill in all of the following, injuries, or cases within that framework. V'imason yehiyah X, then v'nasata tachas X. V'imason yehiyah Y, v'nasata tachas Y. Okay? That you're going to pay to the person who's been damaged money that compensates for the loss. Because we know from elsewhere, also in this parsha, about the rules of paying the five things, right? Nezek, tzar, sheves, ripui, and boshes, which is the damages and the loss of work, etc., the doctor bills, the embarrassment, etc. Those are the different things that a person has to pay for doing any kind of damage. He says that once you've done that, then you've fulfilled your responsibilities. Kistam lashon nesino hutashlumi mamon. Whenever the Torah says that you're going to give refers to mamon. To money, that when the person has to give right, that's the sheves, that's lost wages. You have to be giving money. You're going to be giving the kohen what you have to give him. It's referring to money. So he says, there you go, it's mamon, it's right there. It's just a question of how you utilize Pasuk Chav Gimel, and it can't be ignored. That's why you have to see it in the context. Yeah.
If you go to Pasuk Chav Gimel, and the im ason yeah, what's the purpose of the vav? The nosata, why doesn't it just say nosata nefesh tachas nefesh? What's the vav doing?
Future tense. Nasata,
yeah.
You gave. Then you will give.
Yeah, I think it's saying that the judgment is going to be that you're going to have to give. So I think that's just a grammatical thing.
I'll buy that.
Okay, so that was the first one that I wanted to do with you. That took us already 20 seconds. Okay, fantastic. I knew it was going to happen. Okay, the next one in Zarech Hashem. So I don't want to read through the whole thing with you, but I thought that one in particular was worth it, because it's important to see the nitty gritty. Okay, the next one. Let's look at let's turn the page to the bottom of page 424. So again, noting how, and this is why you can't pay attention to the parak breakdown, because the parak breakdown doesn't necessarily give you an accurate picture of how the Torah presents them. So look at the last pasuk on page 424. When a person steals a sheep, an ox or a sheep, and slaughters it, sells it, you have to pay five in place of the ox and four in place of the sheep. Okay, it's in the same. You see, it's not broken down. Why the perek is broken down there is weird. So there, this is why I think it was the Kliyakar who was of the opinion that machteres is talking about when you catch a guy stealing your sheep, like, you know, in the nighttime. Okay? Ein lo damim. So that's interesting, because it just continues in that vein. Right? Im ein lo v'nim kar b'gnei, he doesn't have it anymore. Hello? Shor chamor atzeh? That's what we were talking about in the last pasuk of the previous chapter, Shnayim Yishalem. So you know, that's one view. Obviously, most of the commentaries view Imba Machteres Yimotzei Aganav as a separate pasuk, and they take it out of the context of everything which is talked about here. And that's fine. But I wanted to show you what he says here on Imzarcha Hashemesh. So I'm not going to go through all this. I just wanted you to see the beginning. But I gave it to you. Okay. So Hizkir Belashon Nekeva Zarcha V'lo Zarach. He says, why does it say im zarcha shemesh in feminine, if the shemesh is a masculine word? Lo zarach ki kein derech hakasul eski b'lashon hakeva kishirotzel ledaber bezman sheshemesh mishvatetesh ba'olam sheshachavis berochav chalolo. Okay, chalolo v'chein le'enei hashemesh hazo. So sometimes the sun is used in that kind of fashion. Okay. However, so that's just a grammatical thing. Okay. Well, hold on 1 second. Eight lines down. Biyom.
Page 3.
It would be the second to last line on page 2. Biyom ein rashai lahargo. She'ein ganav biyom. Says the in the daytime not allowed to kill him because ganav doesn't come in the daytime. Elam yacholi shamet. Because if he has a chance to run away, he's going to run away. And somebody who's stealing in the daytime is not looking to do big stuff to wait for somebody to kill him. But the guy who's coming in the nighttime, since he knows that that the owner of the house might be there, and it's you or me, So his life is lost. So he's quoting somewhere else. That's the generally understood viewpoint as to why you can kill the guy who's coming in the night.
Right, he says that if you find the guy in the night time, he can be killed.
And in the morning, you see him, you recognize him, you can't kill him. He should pay what he gave. Now skip lines. Skip 2 lines to the last word on the line is Vav Nun Lamed. Vinir Lamar or Vinirli. Shelo give no rabbit baum to bishita solomar lamar muklat ki cholgon veyom yishmatu levroach velo yamdu laban lahargo. He says this doesn't really make sense. Okay, there's a major difference between nighttime and daytime robbery and burglary. Why does the guy, he says, you know, I mean, I hear the logic, but on the other hand, somebody steals at night. Why are they stealing at night? Because in the event that they get caught, nobody can see them, and they can run away. You ever read Sherlock Holmes? Sometimes Sherlock Holmes, he has to, because he sees no other way out of the case, he says, Watson, we have a mission, we have to steal something. When do they go? Always. At night. Why? In case they're seen, nobody should recognize their face. Okay, would he be so bold to go in the daytime? He does sometimes. He does, but in a disguise, so that nobody can recognize him anyway. But the point is that he says somebody comes at night. If they get caught, they want to be able to run away. They want to be seen. Whereas if somebody gets caught in the daytime, how embarrassing is it? You can identify me. What is the person likely going to do? Run away or
shoot?
Or shoot? Okay. So that's what he says. He says, the fact of the matter is, daytime stuff is the opposite. The people in the nighttime, as soon as they hear somebody stirring, they hear this moving upstairs, somebody's coming out to check, they're out of there. And there are daytime people that hear somebody who catches them. You saw me, you can identify me, that's it, you're dead. Okay, but the point is, I didn't want to go through the whole thing, but I just wanted to show you that there's another perspective. And so to just say that, oh yeah, that's the only explanation, he says that's not necessarily correct in terms of how human nature works. Right? It's not just machteris in the nighttime. So if you want to start explaining this stuff, then you have to come up with a better explanation than, oh yeah, that's the way it is. Nighttime, the guy, he's planning to kill somebody, in the daytime he's not. Because maybe it's actually the opposite. Okay, so that was the first thing that I wanted to. That's what I wanted to show.
Very cool.
Okay, next, moving along. All right, now the next two which I gave you, which are on page 4, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so both of these are I gave them to you because they were word place. Okay, in other words, he's teaching us something based on the actual language of the text. So let's look at the pasuk for both of these, and we start on page 430. Okay, we have a mitzvah against bestiality, right? Kol shochev in behema mos yumas. So I hope I don't need to explain this mitzvah. Right? Anybody who lies with an animal in a sexual fashion is to be put to death. So he says, but he says something interesting. Why did it say shochev im behema? Shochev im behema. Because as a matter of fact, whenever it talks about human relations of this sort, it uses a different language. Take a look at what he says. B'shchivas adam ba'adam, yishamei shal Hashem be'achas v'shteh milos. Whenever it refers to human sexuality, it uses the word O-L-O-S. It either uses the word el or the word es. Kamo, the el, eshes amitecha lo siten shechavtecha. Right? Don't give your seed to the wife of your friend. The ish asher yishkav es, eshes re'ehu. Right? A man who lies with his with the wife of his neighbor. Amnam b'shkivas other b'behema, but when it's referring to a person having relations with an animal, lo nimtzu shtei milos elo, you don't find those words, el or es. Rak bebeis kamo uvachol behema lo sitain shechavtecha. Right, with all animals, you should not give your availability. We'll just try to keep it clean. Veish asher yitain shechavto bivhema. Right, it may use the letter beis to say in an animal or with an animal, because beis could either mean in or with. Vechan shina l'shamesh b'milas in behema. And here it says in, which typically is translated to mean with. V'yiresh misiba shinoizeh v'inu razal l'inyan nishkav. Okay, he says that it goes, he says the rabbis learned that it means both ways. Not to actively put oneself on an animal, and not to passively put an animal on oneself. He imayal inyan shochev v'yaru lomar asher yitain shechavto b'behema. If it was just the male who was given a prohibition against doing an act actively with an animal, then it would say it asher yitain shechavto. But the fact that it doesn't do that, it uses the word im, it shows that all directions of human with animal, male, female, etc. So this is, he's just getting from the word im. I know it's awkward to talk about this stuff, but he's just noting a subtlety in language, that with humans it's L and S, and with this animal here it's either a bays or the word im with an ayin, just to show that it's all encompassing and trying to minimize the way that it talks about it in the Torah. Okay, next. Hasachaf Aleph, kol almanav yasom lo se'anun. At a widow and a yasom, you cannot oppress. So he's going to explain to us where the word almana comes from. Anybody want to take a guess?
Ulam? Not there, no?
No. Okay, so it has in it the word mana, right? What does mana mean?
Portion.
Yeah. Okay, so. I guess I'm not going to present it. Let's just see what it says. Okay. Shem almana shehunach al eshes al isha shemes baal. Nearly shehu murkav mishtei tevos. He says that the word almana seems to me to be a word which is a conjugation of two words, not a contraction, a conjugation. In other words, it's two words which are combined.
Conjunction.
That's the word of a word. Okay. Al mana. Al lishlila kamo al tochalu. Al means don't or not. It's a negative word. And mana is lashon chelak. It is a portion, like I said. Kamo v'hayalacha l'mana. Kitargumo l'cholik. Ki ha'ish im ishto kechad gufa chashivu. A man with his wife, they're considered to be like one person. Okay. And this is not just in a physical. I mean, there are many ways that you want to look at it, like how the two are united and they become one. They become one. Yomram ishto kegufo, and they're saying that a person's wife is like his body. That alone they're not complete. They're each a portion of the other. Right? That's what makes the unit into something elevated and something special. When you have the word Aleph Yud Shin Hey, it means her husband. Okay, because Ish Shelah. So when the Torah refers to a woman and says that it's a portion of her man, Re'e Chayim Imisha Kihi Chalkacha. That's a pasuk of Halas. You should see and enjoy the life with the wife of your life because she is a portion of you. Kihi Chalkacha. Ulami Sasachad Mihem Anishar Chayim Hu Mishulah Chalko. And when one of them dies, the one that is still alive is missing a portion of them. The woman who is remaining, she is called an al mana. She's missing her portion, part of her. Because man means the same thing, right? Mana is, I guess, lashon nekeva, and man is lashon zacha mekusar. The ain kind of mashkaz of amana al shem mana. It says, don't say that almana comes from the word mana with ignoring the aleph lamed. Ki derech haTalmudim lohosif tam adavar shetam abole atzmo. Halamafur samu shatalmudim hu makirim hetev lashon yivani. So he just, he gives an example, which, you know, it's just out of left field. But he says the Talmudis certainly knew ki afikomen hubaloshen yivani machal anechal achar asuuda. The afikomen is a Greek word which means dessert. When we come up on Beiru, afiku mini mesika. It's like don't start being all you know. Don't start trying to figure. Like, it's pretty clear what it is, okay? And that's what afikomen is. And when it comes to almana, don't start trying to finagle and figure out mana this and this. Almana doesn't have part of who they are.
That's mind blowing.
Okay, I thought that was a beautiful message about what marriage is supposed to be. Okay.
Well, that also explains why you should show extra kindness.
Yeah.
You know, someone lacking.
I mean.
Wow.
Okay. All right. The next one was trefa. How do I not give the pasuk? Where is it?
Trefas.
Okay. Yeah, it's pasuk lamed. Okay. I don't know. Okay. Trefa. Beanche kodesh tiun li. Page 432. Last pasuk in the parakal base. Beanche kodesh tiun li. Ubasar basadet trefa lo sochevu la kelo tesh lichunoso. Okay, he says, I'm not going to read through the whole thing. That wasn't my intention either. I just wanted to give you the beginning where it describes a little bit about trefa. Actually, I cut out most of it anyway. Okay, so let's see what we can get here. Okay, mashmuz ani glibazeh ulazireinu al behemashe tarfa ze'ev o ariba sadeh. Okay, the rule about trefa. What does the word trefa mean? Remember that scene by Torn, right? Remember that scene in Robin Hood Men in Tights? It's a Mel Brooks movie. Where the guy who plays the prince of Nottingham, which they actually call Rottingham in that movie, okay, he's this like very overtly Jewish character, okay. Anyways, at one point Robin Hood comes in carrying this huge pig on his back, and he dumps it on the guy's table, and the guy looks at the pig and he rolls his eyes and goes, "Oh, trafe." Okay, it's just a Mel Brooks joke, right? Okay, but it's wrong. It's not trafe. It's behemoth tmeya, it's not kosher, whatever you want to say. But it's not what treif means. Treif means something which is literally torn. Okay? Vishetorfa be'inyan shehu, or vishetorfa be'inyan shehi nituya lamus b'terafahu. That this thing is going to die on account of whatever treif, whatever tearing exists in this thing's existence. Tevada ibn mashrashim noga b'rosh ozno, talash mitzimrash tikra treif b'kach. That if it has a nick in its ear or something else, which is not going to cause it to die, in other words, a boo-boo, what we would call a boo-boo, is not what makes it trefa. It might not be good for a carbon, right? That's the story, the concept of our concept story. But it doesn't make it trefa. It's something which is going to be dying soon, or sometime in the near future, on account of this tear. How much time does a trefa have? 1 year. This is one of the reasons why, when an animal is shechted, one of the checkings which is done is to see if internally it's a trefa. Was this animal a healthy animal, or was this animal going to die on account of whatever was going on internally? Also, they mavis al kopanim. So the Torah doesn't care which animal caused this injury, as long as the animal is going will die within the next year on account of whatever happened. And these refer to the kinds of injuries that the rabbi said would cause death. Kamosh above mishnah zakal kol shen kamo chaya trepa, etc. Okay, was there something else that I wanted to show you? Yeah, there is. Okay. Okay, skip to the middle of the next line. I'm not sure what Chafei is, but in the Mechilta, Diber HaPasuk Behoveh. In the Mechilta, the Pasuk, it points out that the Pasuk is written in present tense. Lo Sochevu, don't eat it. V'gam kein Litzrach, Lichtov, Basadeh, V'vasar Basadeh Trefa, that it says in the field. K'deilu Lameid Bo Odvar Machirim. Okay, he says it's coming to teach us something more, something further, something deeper. Like, it's one thing to say, okay, don't eat an animal which is trefa, but he says that there's more to it. Why? Ki divrei Torah nidrashim l'kama panim. The words of the Torah are meant to be understood and doreshed, right? To be expounded upon on different levels. Yislav shu michutz levush malchus sheish v'meshi v'rikma tahorim, that they have to, like, this is a metaphor of what the Divrei Torah is supposed to have, a different beautiful garments that we can learn from. Umibifnim yesh zahar, so in other words, the outside might be these, you know, these nice garments, cotton, whatever sheish meshi is, etc. That's very nice. Umibifnim, but once you scratch beneath the surface, what do you find? Yesh zahav, there's gold, rav pninim, and beautiful jewels, levush, and clothes. Zahav pasuk. Hanir of aniglabel yoter mitchila sa'iyun hu lilmod al atreifa levad. The al basar min, I probably said minachai, right? He says to learn about treifa. Shebechlal basar treifa hu, things which are in the category of basar treifa. Mashe bibifnim bo, hu shem lamed al kol basar she yotzachutz mimechitza zo. He says, yeah, we're talking about basar treifa. Okay, that's one thing to look at, the actual meat, which is forbidden. But when you want to go deeper, you have to look at any kind of meat. Any meat which is taken out of the boundaries of where it's supposed to go, which becomes like treifa. Kigon, basar koche kochim, sheyotzachutz lazara, like the meat of certain karbanos which are taken out of the Beis Hamikdash area, they can no longer be eaten. Basar kochim kalim, sheyotzachutz lachoma. And the kachim kalim, which are taken outside of the walls of the city of Yerushalayim, ubasar pesach sheyatzah chutz lachabura, and the meat of the pesach, which is taken out of the group with which in it's supposed to be eaten, v'chein kishahotzi ha'uber esyado chutz l'me'eimo, and like when a fetus is hand emerges, and I'm not sure how often that kind of birth happens, but if that happens, umashma uto shel karahu king. Kilu amor uvasar basadet treifa, klamar basar sheyatza chutz mechitzaso shezel lashon sadet she'ein lo mechitzos treifahu. So he says the language of a sadet which does not have mechitzos is treifa. The point is, I really wanted to take the message more than the meat one about, you know, understanding the rules of where meat is taken, but to understand this little side point that he makes, which is really his goal, that to view Torah as something which is okay, I understand pshat, I got it. He says no. There are layers and layers and layers and layers and layers, and this is just one example of it, of how we understand treifa. Treifa means torn physically, but treifa may also mean torn from its location where it's supposed to be, and that makes it something which is no longer fit to be eaten. Wow. Okay, the next couple of things, I just wanted to show you the definitions. So when it comes to shem hashav, right, take a look at the first pasuk in Perachot Yom. Lo sisa shem hashav. What does lo sisa shem hashav mean? So our scroll translates, don't accept a false report. So look at what he says here. Azhar al-Makaba lashon hara. Milas shav yeshol shtei horos. It's a warning against accepting lashon hara. It has two implications. Ha'echad sheker, ha'beis chinan lo yo'il. One is something which is false, or one which is for no purpose. U'l'shtei l'shonos el lo yodati l'chavei ninyan lashon hara, shu amadaber b'gnus chaveiro af shu emes. He basically says this is all about lashon hara, okay? That sometimes it's about putting somebody down, even if you're telling the truth. And the cheshu sheker, hinehu motzi shemra, because if it's a lie, then it's slander. And it's okay. There are different points to be taken about the language which is implied from shema shav. I didn't want to go through all of it, but I wanted you to see that. So that's I gave you the whole thing, but that's the one. And the next one, look at the next pasuk which he gives you, which is pasuk Zion. Okay, midvar sheker tirchak, that's the pasuk. Midvar sheker tirchak. So, which means distance yourself from falsehood. So he says, shina akasuv, look at, I'm now in the middle of page 6. Shina akasuv lamar azar b'lashon zeh, v'lomar lo tedaber sheker. He says, the Torah doesn't say, don't speak falsehoods. It says, distance yourself from falsehoods. L'fisha ein avera yoter tadira u'mitsuyak modavar sheker. Says there's nothing which is more tadir, right? Extant, umetsuya, and just present, like a lie. And once it's a lie, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and he says, get away from it. A person may think there's no truth in the world. Rashi says there's no person who speaks truth all the time. So the pasuk says, get away from it. Not don't speak sheker. Everybody tells a lie here and there. But if you distance yourself from it, then it's not just your own lies, but it's other lies as well. Get away from the, just the, I mean, chiyor is a very negative word. So get away from it. Rabbeinu Call me a sheker. It's amazing, by the way. The Gemara in Shavuos has I think it's a whole amud and a half. It says, how do you know that you shouldn't do this? Midrash sheker tircha. How do you know you shouldn't do this? Midrash sheker tircha. It gives example after example after example. And, you know, and you look at it, you say, wow, I really need to re-examine my entire life. That's what that Gemara about midrash sheker tircha is. Okay, call me neshaker. Av sheyesh l'mamam barur etzachaveru kagon hayonoshem mana v'tano masayim. Even if you're owed money from your friend, right? You know that you gave him money and he's asking for 200. Lo yomar ech por akol bebeisdin v'odel of mana beno leveni kadesh lo eschayv lo shvua. Right? Don't. Basically, the situation is, you know what? I'll go into Beisdin and I'll agree that I owe him 100. And because there's a rule about moda mixas pater, and this way I won't have to give a shvua. There are a whole bunch of different rules about how you can get out of owing money which you owe if you don't even tell a falsehood. So he says all this midrash sheker tirchak, distance from it, and it's not just saying don't speak sheker, just get it out of your life. Mm-hmm. It's an important lesson. Okay, the next one was about Shabbos. And this is kind of interesting, actually, that in the context of talking about the Yom Tovim, there's one pasuk which is thrown in here about Shabbos, which really just seems out of context. Sheishes yamim pasuk yibeis. Sheishes yamim taseh masecha v'yom ha'shvi tishbos l'man yanuach shorecha v'chamorecha v'yinafesh ben ha'masecha v'yaget. 6 days you should work, seventh day you should rest, so that your shor and your chamor can rest. V'yinafesh ben ha'masecha v'yaget, and your maidservant's son and the sojourner may be refreshed. Okay? So he says, "Ein kavanas hamikra shemitzvah Shabbos kidei she'enuach hashorach hamor." He says, "Don't think that the whole reason for Shabbos is so that your ox and your donkey can rest." Aval ta'amod leman ze yanuach shorcha. So he says you have to read the pesukim the right way. That leman ze was sheishim tasem asecho v'yom hashvi'i tishbos. On account of Shabbos, your shor has an opportunity to rest. It's not that you keep Shabbos so that your shor can rest. It's that you. It's that on account of your keeping Shabbos, your shor has the opportunity to rest. Uchamo leman tizkor is yom tzeisacha eretz Yisrael kol yimechayecha. That what does leman mean? On account of, not in order of that. Okay, so that he's basically saying that the leman goes back on what came beforehand to indicate where the resting comes from. Okay, so that was it. Now we move on. We don't have a lot of time left. So let me see what I highlighted as most important here. Okay, let's see. The El Moshe Amar. Alright, so here is so some of this stuff I'm gonna summarize outside. Okay, this is we're skipping the rest of Perek of Gimel, and I want to move on to Perek of Dalet. Okay, Perek of Dalet. So take a look at the Psukim. El Moshe Amar. So now the Torah returns to the narrative of where it left off at the end of Parashas Yisroel. El Moshe Amar Leil Hashem. Moshe is told, "You're going to come up to Hashem. Ata, you, Aaron, Nadav, Aviu, Shirin, Zibnei Yisrael. Aaron's two older sons and the 70 elders. Vishtachav Yisemir Rachok, and you're going to bow from a distance. V'nigash Moshe Lavado Hashem Vehim Lo Yigashu. Moshe is going to approach, and they will not approach." And the nation certainly will not go up anymore. Mm-hmm. So Moshe talks to the people, tells them all the words of Hashem and the Mishpatim. Which Mishpatim? Good question. Is it the Mishpatim of everything which came beforehand? I don't know. So they say, we're going to do everything which Hashem said, which I think they said in last week's Parsha as well. So Moshe, Vayichtov Moshe is called Dibrei Hashem. Moshe writes down all the words of Hashem. What's that referring to? Vayashkem baboker, Vayivim Mizbeach Tachas Ahar, and he gets up in the morning and he builds a Mizbeach at the bottom of the mountain. So when Aaron is going to be approached about the golden calf, Aaron also builds a Mizbeach at the bottom of the mountain. But what was wrong with this Mizbeach? Okay. Ushtem Mesrei Matzeva, and 12 monuments, L'shtem Masnor Shevtei Yisrael, for the 12 tribes. So the young men, they bring sacrifices. Moshe takes half of the blood and he puts it into these aganos. What are aganos? Basins. And half of it he put on the Mizbeach. He takes the book of the covenant. the book of the Kabbalah. Anybody? Okay, Vayikrobi Ozneam, and he read it to the people, Vayomru, and they say, Kol Hashem Dibar Hashem Na'aseh V'Nishma. Now, he can't be writing the Torah, certainly not the Torah as we have it, but it's something. And the people say, Na'aseh V'Nishma. Okay. Vayikach Moshe Asadam Vayizrok Ala'am. Moshe takes the blood and he throws it and he sprinkles it on the people. He says, this is the blood of the covenant that Hashem is has forged with you for everything. So that is a reflection of Pasuk Aleph. Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, Abihu, and the 70 elders go up. Which is interesting. What does that mean? They see the God of Israel. And Sachas Raglov, and under his feet, is like Lunasa Sapir, some of the sapphire brickwork, like the essence of the heaven and purity. And it says that the leaders were not, he did not send his hand. Who did not send his hand? God did not send his hand. Moshe did not send his hand. They saw Elohim and they ate and they drank. Okay, so we're going to leave that for what it is. And then afterwards, Moshe is told to go up and he goes up, he goes into the cloud. 6 days, and then God calls to him on the seventh day, and that's what it is. So now, what are we going to do? We don't have time. So let's see if I can summarize. So a few things I want to point out. Okay, number one, Ve'el Moshe Amar, he notes to us that this parsha is told to us before the Aseres Nimros, and he goes into the discussion about what is the order of the Torah, is the Ramban right, is Moshe right, what was how much of this is before Matan Torah, or before Revelation, etc. And he also goes into the question of which day of the week this is, which is an interesting conversation. Anyway, the point is that when you look at this in the context of the greater picture of narrative, you understand that look at the last five words of the parsha, Moshe is Bahar Arba'im Yom Ba'Arba'im Laila, that after Moshe goes up over here, he's up there for 40 days and 40 nights. So how does that relate to where Moshe is on the mountain with respect to the Aseres Adibros? Okay, when Hashem says the Aseres Dibros, where's Moshe? Good question. Okay, so here, that's one of the reasons why he prefers Rashi's approach of Ein Mukdama Mukhar Torah, that you don't have, the Torah doesn't give an actual chronology. Really, what I wanted to show you is the part which I put in italics here. Okay? You're going to love this. Okay, I'm not, I don't want to get into a big deal about this, but if you look at the part where he talks about past and present tense. So look at what he says in parenthesis. It's about two-thirds of the way down. It's the first word on the line. Imperfectum. Imperfectum. Right? And look at the next one. Plusqua imperfectum. So all I could think of was like past perfect. I don't know that stuff. Right? I don't know that kind of grammar. But that's what he's explaining here. Okay, he's talking about grammar, in other words, in terms of trying to understand. So look at the last three lines in this section on Pascal. He says, if you look at this and combine it with what Hashem says, I'm going to come to you in a cloud in Parshas Yisro. Whatever there was between Hashem and Moshe. So in other words, he's saying that the Torah is selecting things to appear in Yisro for one reason and Mishpatim for a different reason. Okay, and that is just the way the Torah operates. It's a good thing to just understand. I'm convinced now, by the way. For many years, I thought that Ramban was correct. That Yesh Mukdam Mucha B'Torah. He says that Ramban is wrong, and I'm convinced that Ramban is incorrect, and that Rashi's approach is correct, because there's no way. Okay, next. I don't know why I gave you a Snare Ben Israel. I shouldn't have given that to you. Okay. Skip. Eight. Sefer Abris. So he tries to explain to us what Sefer Abris is. So one opinion is that it's the book of Bereshis. Why? Because it has in it, if you look in line 2, Bris 9.